Listen, I don't need anybody. You heard that right. I don't need anyone.
Like, when people don't come correct with me, I'm like really quick to cut people out. Like, I don't even think twice about it.
You know when you're protecting your peace, but then you realize, okay, I really haven't socialized in a week.
There is this wave of intolerance to discomfort that has overcome Gen Z. Going to bed at 9 p.m. every single night and reading is not protecting your peace. Oftentimes, it's actually just developing an allergy to chaos, an allergy to the spontaneity of human existence.
Because Gen Z is so obsessed with this idea of setting standards and boundaries, so much so that if you cross them or if you don't, quote unquote, respect them, you were out of the picture. You were cut off.
I don't know what it is about our generation, but I feel like almost everyone I know goes to therapy, has a 7-step skincare routine, prefers to stay in instead of going out to the club. I feel like we're really out here taking care of us, you know?
Answer her messages because I don't owe her anything. He's single. Arrest me.
There's no doubt that Gen Z has a loneliness problem, but it might be of their own making. For a generation that prides themselves on inclusivity and acceptance, they're also quick to cut others out when the going gets tough. In the name of protecting their peace, there's little room for second chances because when boundaries get crossed, there's no going back. After all, why waste energy on people who don't deserve it? As they say, I don't owe anyone anything. But what came first in this situation? Did Gen Z push themselves away and create their own loneliness epidemic? Or did they already feel isolated, leaving them no motivation to maintain relationships in the first place? In a world where you can have all your basic needs delivered to your door and even hire out temporary friends through services like Rent-A-Friend, we seem to be moving towards a system where human connection is increasingly optional. And so maybe there's some truth to Gen Z not needing anyone. Well, that's what I want to discuss today, how Gen Z became so lonely and why they've come to see other people as expendable. To understand why Gen Z feels so lonely, we need to start with the rise in selfishness that has fed into this. Over time, there's been a rising trend of individualism in the world, where putting oneself first has become the norm. And as the mindset has gained in popularity, it's even been given a name, collective narcissism. The definition here is, an individual narcissist is someone with a deep need for validation, someone who thinks they're great and resents anyone who doesn't recognize their greatness. Collective narcissists are a group of people who desperately need their group to be admired and validated by others. And this might seem very extreme, but it's actually quite common in many of the personas we encounter in our day-to-day. People like the corporate climber that prioritizes personal career advancement over teamwork or ethics. The rise and grind guy who's obsessed with self-improvement, passive income, and side hustles. The travel blogger who believes in hyper self-sufficiency, no attachment, no responsibilities, just vibes. And even the soccer mom whose minivan is full of "my child did this and that" bumper stickers to emphasize the success of her family unit. Slowly over time, we have prioritized ourselves and taken pride in how individualistic we've become. But as it turns out, the narcissism runs deep in the generations and didn't just start with Gen Z. Initially, we had the baby boomers, who were often nicknamed the me generation because of their increased self-interest and materialism. Then came Gen X, labeled as the slacker generation in their youth, because many rejected the system and idealized alternative lifestyles like freelancing or creative jobs. And of course, our millennials got the lovely title as the participation trophy generation, as they were a part of the self-esteem revolution of the 80s and 90s, where parents and teachers increasingly sought to protect children's self-esteem by artificially cocooning them from natural consequences and awarding subpar performances. Over time, the focus on the self has been rebranded but built upon, and now Gen Z has formed their own version without a name yet, but will likely have something to do with digital narcissism. To dissect Gen Z's path to egocentrism, we do unfortunately have to talk about COVID, but I will keep it brief. As stated, the rise in narcissism was already underway, but the perfect ingredient to push us into full-blown self-obsession was the fear of others. There's nothing that makes you more self-focused than being told that everyone around you is bad and they can make you sick. That, combined with the rise in social media usage to distract ourselves from the chaos, means that people had outlets to make up for their lack of community. Approximately 94% of Gen Z use social media today, and the average Gen Z spends 2 hours and 43 minutes on social media every day. And it's not just the usage of social networks that has played a part in this, but the media itself has turned out to be self-centered as well. We see this in things like the self-care trend that came out of the pandemic, but has only continued to grow since. What was originally about skincare skincare routines, buying yourself little treats, and taking yourself out on date nights has now become a full-fledged lifestyle with a multi-step process to do your skincare, including layers and layers of products, almost as a ceremonial act. With serums, moisturizers, eye masks, mouth tape, frowny patches, and heatless curling rods.
Does anyone else feel like our generation is amazing at a lot of things, but is anyone else just feeling like we've taken self-care to mean something completely different than what it means? And I actually think, I don't want to paint us all with the same brush, but I do think our generation could end up being one of the most selfish generations.
Creators proudly show off their intricate night rituals, almost as a game that whoever has the most complicated routine is the winner. This has also led into trends like glazed donut skin, which is a routine that gives you an ultra-moisturized, glowy skin complexion, as well as the morning shed, where you take off all these layers of skincare and hair care, and the more you have to take off, the prettier you'll be in the morning. Now, I'm not saying this to shame the girlies for caring about your skin. I have a skincare routine as well, but it's the obsession with more and more and the time commitment that's making people more self-focused. There's a fine line between caring for yourself and justifying a selfish behavior under the guise that it's good for you. And when you've taken it too far, self-care is just a method of isolation and comfort when you don't have the social care that you actually need. One form of self-care that is for your benefit, however, is your eye care. And that brings us to today's sponsor, who is Pair Eyewear. Pair Eyewear isn't just any glasses company. They are changing the game in eyewear by offering top quality, customizable glasses that fits everyone's unique style. Their magnetic top frames are such a game changer in that they let you effortlessly switch up your style without having to buy multiple pairs of glasses. They have 18 base frame options in various shades and colors, along with over 400 unique top frames. Their website also has a virtual try-on feature that allows you to digitally try on different pairs without needing to physically visit a store. I've been loving my Ella base frames in tortoise, that they're a little more feminine than my usual style. And with spring at our doorstep, my priority is to protect my eyes from the sun. So along with my chocolate top frame, I also got the black sun top and the gold reflective sun top. If you're also a prescription glasses wearer, then you know that it often feels easier to just be blinded by the sun than to have to fumble through glasses cases and switch out to your prescription sunglasses. And that's not good for us. But with Pair Eyewear, you can just easily throw on your sun tops and you won't have to deal with retina damage this summer. On top of that, they are also affordable, with their base frame starting at $60 and their top frame starting at $25. So if you would like to try out Pair Eyewear for yourself, check out the link in the description and use code AshleyEmbers15 for 15% off your first pair. Now, this wouldn't be a talk about our self-obsessed culture if we didn't include influencers. It's interesting how social media has normalized self-indulgence because now it's a reflection of success. I think there was a shift with this because it wasn't always so socially acceptable. People were, and I guess still are, pretty judgmental about people taking selfies. But before influencers, it was super cringy to try too hard on social media because the self-obsessed image that it portrays isn't a good look. But when people realized that influencers were actually making money off of this, the attitude towards it changed. Not to say it isn't cringy to try and become an influencer, and people do still remark how uncomfortable it is to post like you have 200,000 followers when you only have 200. But seeing that now more than half of young people want to be influencers, I think it's safe to say that it's more normalized. What used to be thought as narcissistic, vain, and self-centered behavior is now the guiding norm of society. We're living in an era where humans are putting forth these edited and inflated versions of their lives, this idealized self, and then they are quite literally falling in love with themselves. But the reason it's become so normalized is not just because people have found a way to monetize it, it's because now it's a status symbol and an image of success. As a society, we are always drawn to people who have achieved success, hoping to follow in their footsteps and claim it for ourselves, whether it's noble work or not.
You know why I think most of us are like obsessed with influencer culture? Because it's so far from our current reality. Like, some of us are struggling to pay our bills or like buy groceries or whatever, and then these girls are like, I'm gonna get my nails done for the second time this week because like I didn't like that shade of green. We're like, what? Like, my tires are bald and I can't buy diapers for my kids, but like, I'm gonna watch this girl get her nails done. You know what I mean?
We don't just rely on our high sense of who's skillful and successful when we work out who to copy. As a highly social, groupish species, we tend to look at who other people consider worthy of attention. And in the modern day, the best version of social affirmation is going viral. When thousands of people are watching your content, it means that you have something to say that people care about. It's not rocket science, it's just that we love attention. When everyone around you has a strong social media presence, even if it's clearly fake, it can create major internal anxiety. identity. Crafting a persona that's filled with only positive information, like an embellished Instagram profile or an exaggerated Snapchat story, will create a positive self-acceptance that's very stabilizing and soothing. The other reason why we put influencers on pedestals is because the second thing that we prize as human species is prestige. It doesn't matter necessarily what you're doing, but if you're getting respect and admiration because of it, then people will see them as cultural leaders and congregate to them. The fact that working as an influencer means you can make boatloads of money doing whatever you want and doing it free from the restraints of a 9-to-5 means that people will start idolizing that life and copying it. It doesn't necessarily matter that it's an egotistical career, it just matters that they've made it in the world. And so regular people will reflect this lifestyle of being self-obsessed because we've always copied the rich and successful. And I feel like this is for anyone in the social media world if you're the main character of your content. Even if you aren't sharing about your life specifically, you're still filming yourself, spending hours looking at yourself on a screen while editing, and looking for approval from others in those photos and videos you've taken. Like, as much as I'd like to say that my videos aren't about me, I've never seen more of me in my life since becoming a YouTuber.
I think another dystopian societal impact of influencing is how much it's normalized younger and younger people to feel compelled to get Botox and fillers. It's just so much more normalized than it used to be. And I think that's because we're watching influencers who are staring at themselves on their phones all day, every day. That's not normal. It drives you insane. And influencers are looking at themselves through the back camera, which just distorts the way you see yourself. It is not healthy. The insecurity from the influencers just trickles down to normal people and younger people. But it makes more and more people who aren't staring at their own faces all day, every day, think that they need that.
But social media is only really the tip of the iceberg of our self-obsessed culture, and it is by no means the cause. It was just created in a system that was already excessively wrapped up in itself. As said here, the selfie camera didn't create this narcissism. It simply gave us a new device to amplify it. And so if social media is just a symptom of our narcissistic culture, then we need to get into what the actual cause is if we're going to pull Gen Z out of their loneliness epidemic. Well, to find out why our culture values individualism, we can actually take it back to our hunter-gatherer days and the deep-rooted instinct to get ahead. Since our identity is shaped by our environment and our survival depends on our circumstances, it all ultimately ties back to self-preservation. Back in our tribal days, self-preservation was dictated by sticking with your group, as if you were left out on your own, you wouldn't make it. And what was the best way to get accepted by your group? It was to boost your reputation. As we've discovered back in our tribal hunter-gathering days, the thing that all human selves fundamentally want is to get along and get ahead. Everyone has this in common. When we're born, our brains look to the environment to tell us who we ought to become in order to best fulfill this deep primal need. And so what we were looking for were ways to improve our reputation, whether that was becoming better at a skill set or helping each other out more. Whatever the cultural surroundings required, that person would become. But moving forward in time, modern individuality actually came out of ancient Greece. Athens is commonly viewed as the birthplace of democracy, with Aristotle's ideology that emphasized the importance of the individual, as well as the geography where city-states each had its own form of government that fostered a sense of local identity. But as I stated before, this isn't a mindset that's naturally ingrained in us, but one that's adopted by our environment. And so just because ancient Greece did it doesn't mean that everyone subscribed to this ideology. And we can see this best in the differences between the Western cultures and the Eastern cultures. Because while Greece was going through its self-succeeding revelations, China, on the other hand, was going down a different route. China's history, as far as I've learned, is one of group and harmony within it, ones where traits of the self-righteous and prophet are frowned upon, where identity is largely focused on the collective, compliance with authority, and the maintenance of stability. As it's written in the book Selfie, it isn't just that Easterners versus Westerners think about the world totally different. They're literally seeing a different world. We've found that if you show people pictures for 3 seconds, the Westerners will look all over its main object and only occasionally make eye movements that drift out of the context. For the Chinese, they're looking constantly back and forth between the objects and the context. This means that they're able to tell you more about relationships. The Asian self melts at the edges into the self that surrounds it, whereas the Western self tends to feel more independent and in control of its own behavior and destiny. And so with that, we see that it's not a given that the self was made to excel and surpass others in the name of self-preservation, as it's one of multiple multiple ways to find success in your group. I include this history because I, for one, found it super interesting, but it's also a real wake-up call that we can find success outside of this way of living. Our environment plays such a big role on who we become, not to say that an individual's situation can't waver from that, but the fact is that when we're working out who we need to be to get ahead, we mimic the people who have found a path to success. And so the self-absorption of our culture is not new, and it's not isolated to Gen Z, but it's a mindset that's been adopted by our tribe. Okay, we're gonna jump in history again, but I really hope you can't tell I'm losing my voice. Our whole family is sick and I'm like pushing through to like, I'm hoping that the sickness doesn't hit me too hard until I'm done this video, but I'm very sorry if my voice sounds horrible by the end of this. We're gonna keep pushing through, okay? Because I don't wanna have to refilm this. Okay, so things took a shift in the 70s when we started prioritizing corporations over government. Prior to the 70s, America was in what was called the Great Compression, where the wealth gaps between the rich and the poor were smaller. This was the peak age for the middle class, where those without college degrees could still get a good paying job, have their cute nuclear family, buy a suburban house, and own a couple of cars. But after the 1970s, that idealized life started to deteriorate. The economy stagnated, inflation surged, stock markets crashed, the GDP tanked, and millions lost their jobs. And so in came neoliberalism, a new hot take that was supposed to fix all of this. And this neoliberalism world would be one of economic freedom. It was an ideology with an overriding emphasis on freedom, free choice, free markets, freedom from government or trade union interference, one that prized an idealized form of self-reliance, small government, and a brutal competitive mindset that places self-interest above community and the collective good. This free market, one with little government involvement, would be what reconfigured the social structure that we know today. One with massive wealth gaps between the middle class and the rich, with political interference on government policies, with little power to the worker, and overall just winners and losers.
Many argue that efforts to deregulate our economic markets have actually increased financial instability and inequality. Proponents of neoliberalism push the ideas of individualism, and instead of addressing social issues like poverty, crime, and even illness as problems that the government is responsible to prevent and handle, they appoint those problems as a responsibility of the individual and assert that if everyone just picked themselves up by their bootstraps, they wouldn't be dealing with the problems that they face today.
Now, this is not to say that neoliberalism is completely bad. It's the same as our conversation about capitalism, in that these things can be great, but have problems when left unregulated. And the problem here is that this neoliberal economy is what has fueled our competitiveness and created a dog-eat-dog world, where if you're not getting ahead, you're being left behind. The consequences of neoliberalism point to part of the reason, specifically growing income and wealth disparities and the polarization caused by the media. In theory, economic freedom was supposed to be the bedrock basis for political freedom and democratic health. The opposite has proved to be true. The rich and the elites have a disproportionate voice in shaping both government policies and societal narratives, all of which leads to an enhanced sense by those who are not wealthy that the system is rigged and unfair, which makes healing divisions all the more difficult. Specifically, our workplace being self-focused plays a big role as it bleeds into other avenues of our lives. When you look at the demolition of unions, it's no wonder people see the workplace as a competition rather than a collective.
Things have been so crazy. I haven't even eaten lunch yet. I feel like I literally haven't eaten anything all day because of work and how crazy.
And that's something that affects the way you treat others outside of work as well, as that is what's required to make it in a world where the middle is eroding away. And so it was that the gamification of society triggered the greed is good era, which represented a staggering transformation from the self of the anti-materialistic, communistic hippie that has grown out of the mid-century's more collective economy. This new and intensified form of competitive individualism meant less support from employers and the state, which in turn meant more and more pressure placed upon the individual. Neoliberalism, while great for the economy, has decreased our trust in others, in that self-interest will always supersede the greater good. And so now we live in this new form of society where everything is centered around competition. From the motives behind the friends that we make, which charity we donate to having the larger tax return, what school we send our kids to get the best career. Our value in life has become tied to a dollar sign, and so why would we need others in life when we're self-made? And And so with all of this put together, it's no wonder that Gen Z is lonely and searching high and low for the so-called village that's nowhere to be found. Because we've been phasing out villages for decades now. And for the first time in history, we don't actually need each other necessarily for survival. Since the start of human time, we have always survived off of one requirement, that we look after each other and care for each other and share what we have. Like, yes, we do still need others now for resources, but we don't need community like we used to. We're subscribing to a system that focuses on the self and even prides itself on it. And so at that point, we don't even value a village despite what people say. Because a village isn't just something that you consume and benefit from, it's something that you contribute to. It's one thing to say that you want a village and another to actually reach out to the people in your life and support them, therefore building your village.
Here's the thing, everyone wants to attend more parties, but no one wants to throw them. We just sort of like expect them to appear when we need them, like fire trucks. But we're obligated to create the social world we want. If we want parties, we need to throw them. America is in a party deficit. You could be the change we need.
Mind you, I know the odds are against us in today's day and age with the 9-to-5 plus hustle work culture and the silent recession where we don't actually have any money to spend on people anyways. But still, we need to realize that the system may be destroying the village, but we have the power to rebuild it.
I saw a tweet yesterday that said being annoyed is the price that you pay for community, and I couldn't agree more. I feel like everybody wants a village, but we don't really want to act like villagers.
It's also kind of become a flex if you don't need the system, because it means that you're self-reliant and therefore have reached an apex of success. We're subconsciously taught that true accomplishment means making it on your own, and the idea of having to rely on someone to get there takes away from the achievement itself. And even if no one has ever actually been self-made, we all rely on someone at some point in our life. There's still this stigma that if you didn't need a handout, then you've actually made it. We see this in the pressure to retire early, and with that, not needing the workforce anymore. Not needing insurance is the ultimate flex, that you can pay outright for your health expenses. In housing, paying off your mortgage is prestigious, or living off the grid because you have independence from utilities, food supply chains, or government oversight. Or even the trend of homeschooling, even if it's not your intention, there's still this energy of being better than the public school system. We live in a world where if you don't need the system, you're winning. Even though the system was literally made for everyone's benefit. It's like the ultimate power move is being able to opt out while still enjoying the benefits indirectly. And so because we've already prioritized the idea that we don't need anyone, why would we think that we owe anyone anything either? To hone in on the I don't owe anyone anything trend, because that's where this all got stirred up from, I don't think that it's necessarily a trend, but a mindset that will stick with every generation moving forward unless we redirect it. And as I've talked about previously in my How Capitalism Destroyed Community for Profit video, this loneliness epidemic is not just hurting us emotionally, but physically. It puts people at greater risk for heart disease, cancer, stroke, hypertension, dementia, and premature death. And as far as I've seen, we haven't been making any progress on the matter. And without intentionally working towards building community, we will keep getting trends like I don't owe anyone anything, because we don't have anyone in our circles to owe.
I am noticing something as a therapist, and it's kind of spicy, and it's going to cause some of you to feel a lot of things. I am desperately calling on some of you to be better friends. Stop committing to something and then not showing up. So many people are complaining of feeling lonely, feeling alone, feeling isolated, and then self-sabotaging when those opportunities present themselves. And I think the flakiness has gone too far.
And this idea of self-reliance has only intensified as the world has gotten worse. With it feeling like everything's burning right now, we instinctively put our guards up. And being self-centered is a defense mechanism when we feel like we're under threat. We've grown up with this idea of community that's only been washed away further and further with the pandemic. And so when you already don't have access to community, it's easy to say that you don't need it rather than facing the fact that you're just alone. Our generation is great at loving, but we're bad at being vulnerable. We're afraid to show that we care because we don't want the other person to believe that we cannot live without them. People want the liberty to do whatever they want freely without consequence. But the truth is that if you want to be part of a society, then you do actually owe people quite a few things. We owe each other respect, basic care, decency, communication, and just humanity.
We as a society finally agreed to abolish the whole I don't owe anyone anything mentality. I think it's absolutely ruined so many people's emotional capacity and the communication styles, because you think that you don't need to give them a reason reason why you stopped talking to them, even though you've been best friends for 5 years. Just because you don't owe anyone anything doesn't mean that you should still not have respect for them to give them an answer.
And in this day and age, the self has blown up so much that we forget that the self is always a part of something, whether you like it or not. Unless you were dropped in the woods at birth and grew up all alone, chances are you've needed someone at some point in your life. And because of that, you do owe people things. It's also super unique that we even live in a world where we can say these things. Like, not that long ago, we literally needed other people for our survival, and now we can just protect our peace all the way to complete isolation. And with the technological advances we've had, even over the past 5 years, we're being set up to be self-sufficient, and that you could opt out of any human interaction. But no matter how much we do want to isolate ourselves, we are social creatures, so we need each other. You need people in your life to cheer you up when you're down. You need someone to share your accomplishes with and also to share your failures. You need someone to laugh with and you need someone to cry with. And this mindset only pushes you away from others, as it's not seeing relationships for what they really truly are, which is sometimes inconvenient, and rather you're seeing them as business interactions.
Look how we talk about relationships, platonic or romantic, online. Look how we speak about it. It's always tit for tat. It's always what's in it for me. When men talk about women or talk to women in regards of relationships, it's what do you bring to the table? How do you benefit me? Basically, list all of your assets for me like a job interview so I can know what can I benefit from you being with me.
A friend who you can't rely on and that they can't rely on you is not a real friend. We're supposed to need each other, and that's what builds strong relationships. I also feel like we're living in a day and age where we forget what it takes to make and keep friends. With the parasocial relationships we have online now, we get free access to personalities without the ties of a real relationship. Good, strong relationships take time to build, and sometimes they have lulls in them. It isn't the instant gratification we're used to in our dopamine gluttonous day and age, and so we expect relationships to be without flaws. To end on this quote, "You don't owe anyone anything is cheap. Caring costs us something. And eventually, we all discover that caring was the only thing that really mattered. Hopefully, it won't be too late when we do." Okay, final thoughts. Should I whisper the entire ending of this video? Thank you so much if you've made it this far with this horrendous voice. I just knew that if I was gonna quit, it would be like a week till I could film again, because I am doing damage right now. Anyways, actual final thoughts. First of all, it's important to note that not all Gen Zers are super selfish. A lot of them reject the "I don't owe anyone anything" trend. We never want a blanket statement here, and I always have to clarify that we don't. But it doesn't change the fact that this is a trend that persists within Gen Z. I also don't want this to come across as a message to be a doormat and let people walk over you. Definitely stand your ground against people who don't treat you well. But we need to remember that caring for your relationships is also a form of self-care, and we shouldn't be dismissing that. And protecting your peace can be taken too far to the point where you're using it as a free pass to avoid accountability. And it's important to realize that it's easier to blame others than point the mirror at ourselves. So reach out to your friends and accept that sometimes relationships are hard. And remember that you don't want to be alone on your deathbed. But that's all for today. I'm going to go take a good long nap and probably not speak for another week. Bye.
So the thing I noticed about my relationship with skincare is that the more severely I am in my head, the more step I have in my skincare routine. And it makes perfect sense, because I do feel the need to overcompensate for my insecurity, my sadness, and also to create a false illusion that I'm taking care of myself, I'm doing something for myself, and to tie myself work into my external factor because I'm empty on the inside.